Hello darts fans and welcome to episode number 3 of Inside the BDO, the podcast. I'm joined by my co-host as always, Andrew Sinclair. Good evening, Andrew. How are you?
Good evening, Tom. I'm good, thank you very much, mate. Enjoying the darts.
Yeah, and there's been obviously a bit of a quiet patch in the BDO sort of things heading into the 2019 BDO World Darts Championship on January the 5th. What have you been up to? Have you been watching the PDC stuff?
Yeah, I've just been watching the PDC stuff, enjoying Christmas with family and friends. So just taking it easy before 2019 kind of hits us. And I've got Lakeside to look forward to, but also kind of going back to university and all the joys that will bring.
Yeah, and just a quick summary of what we've got in the show on this podcast for you. We've got the fallout from the Finder Darts Masters. We've got a special close-up preview to Lakeside. We'll be talking a bit about Adam Smith Neil, an update, quick update on him and his injury problems, and obviously looking at the draw for the Lakeside, both the men's and the Andrew, first of all, we'll talk quickly about Adam Smith Neil. He's been putting on social media and stuff about a quick update regarding his injury.
Yeah, he said today that he'd started putting weight on the leg again and that he'll be starting physio next week, but that's not particularly encouraging given that he starts his World Championship campaign on the Sunday, so 9 days' time. It's hard to see how, if he's only just putting weight on the leg, how he'll be able to stand on the hockey and comfortably throw darts in the first round, and if he wins that, continuing on throughout the tournament. You'd have thought he'd probably have to wear some sort of protective boot of some kind, and that's not going to facilitate him playing his best game at all. But again, you've got to understand that he won't want to pull out. But it's not encouraging.
Yeah, you say there about him not wanting to pull out of the competition, but we've seen at the match play in July, Gerwyn Price had a ruptured Achilles tendon, and he could barely even walk up the stairs of the stage to play. It was Joe Cullen on that occasion, and he got beat 11-2. He couldn't even stand on his standing foot, and you feel that Adam is really going to struggle, but obviously he doesn't want to give up his Lakeside place, but at the same time, just common sense come into it.
Yeah, you've got to be realistic and know that if you're not going to play particularly well, you're going to be uncomfortable, and in many ways you're going to hurt your recovery and perhaps put yourself out for longer. You've got to bear in mind that Adam's a young bloke. He won the World Masters. He's a good dart player. Q school probably on the horizon if you so choose to go there. You don't want to try and play at Lakeside, make it worse, rule yourself out of Q school, and then rule yourself out a couple of months into the year, and then you're left stuck with opportunities, you're scrapping for points. So, yeah, he doesn't want to pull out, but you also don't want to hinder yourself at all. It's a difficult one, and obviously there's money involved as well. The money he'll get from playing at the BDO is a lot more than any other BDO event, even for just playing in the first round. It's still a couple of thousand quid. That's still good money. You don't want to give that up if you don't have to. And he's probably quite a stubborn bloke. He doesn't want to give up the opportunity. I know if I was in his position, I wouldn't either. But hopefully, if he genuinely isn't going to be fit enough, the BDO will have set a deadline. And if he can't prove his fitness to them, he'll have to pull out. Because obviously we did have a pull-out last year. James Hurrell had to withdraw at the start of the year because he was unwell and he got replaced. So there must be some protocol in place, but hopefully he'll make the right decision for him, be that play or not play.
Yeah, I was just going to say, do the BDO have some sort of medical system where if a player is in doubt of competing in a tournament, do they have a sort of ruling that they have to sort of undergo some sort of medical before they're declared fit to play in such a big tournament?
You'd have thought there probably is some protocol. I don't know of one specifically, but you'd thought there would be one. And if you've broken your foot and you're only putting weight on it a week before, that sets off alarm bells for me, and that would probably set alarm bells off for a medical professional. I'm not claiming to be one, but it doesn't sound encouraging. You would have thought they would have some regulation in place, because they need to know if they need a replacement player. And if they leave it too late, they might not be able to get a replacement. And it might be that Mark McGrath, who was due to play in the preliminary round, just gets a bye into the first round if he can't play, and they leave it too long to let them know.
And quickly moving on there from Adam Smith, Neil, what did you make of the 2018 Finder Darts Masters? I thoroughly enjoy this tournament. It's one of my favourite events on the calendar. They produce a great stream on Dutch TV. It was a great production, and the darts on display did not disappoint us.
It was a thoroughly entertaining tournament. Yet again, their production values are second to none, really. It's so professional. All the players speak very highly of it. I spoke to Dan Day a week or so ago, and he was saying that he loves going over there. He loved going over there this year for the first time because it's so professional. They really take care of you, and you feel like you're part of a really special tournament like you do at Lakeside. I thought there were some really good darts and a chance for some players that perhaps don't get spotlight in some of the TV tournaments to really show some good stuff. And it gave us a good indication of who's where in the run-up to Lakeside, because it's the biggest competitive test any of them are going to have before it all kicks off in a week or so.
Yeah, and let's just go through some of the results from the ladies' side of things at the Finder Darts Masters. Lisa Ashton winning the tournament with an 88.68 average and a 2-1 set victory over Fallon Sherrick in what was a high-quality final.
Oh, it was outstanding from both of them. They've been the two best players on the ladies' tour this year, for my money. And they went out there and showed the form they showed all year and all tournament and produced a really good final. Lisa was incredible as always, but Fallon this year has really developed the scoring side of her game. She showed that at the World Trophy, and she showed that again here. The two of them consistently average well in their group stages and then in the final. And it was really good stuff to watch. And as it proved to be, it set Lisa in good stead for the World Championships, where she was very, very impressive against Jan Dekker.
Yes, and in the quarters and the semis and the final, both players averaged above the 80 mark, so that's an impressive statement. Lisa, an 87 in a semi-final victory over Sharon Prinz, a 4-0 victory, and Fallon Sherrick recorded a 4-0 victory also over Astrid Trobost, and that was another 80.16 average. So the averages are creeping up from the top ladies, and it's really good to see. And of course, it made no coincidence that Lisa Ashton and Anastasia competing in the PDC World Darts Championship. What did you make of their showing?
Oh, it was amazing, and it was no less than I'd expected. A lot of people were saying, oh, the women, they won't be able to compete, they'll look stupid or whatever, and they won't be able to compete with the men. Well, that's a nonsense idea. Darts is a non-contact sport. There was no reason at all why women and men can't compete together. Women just haven't had the opportunity really in the past, and they don't play as long games. So initially, yeah, they'd be favourites to lose, but that's because they're not used to playing best of five set games. But you saw the first set, and especially Anastasia in her game, the two women showed great staying power, great scoring, and they were very, very competitive, and I'd love to see it again. And I think the rising tide, as the saying goes, will lift all boats. If you have more women playing with the men, playing at a better standard across the board and improving their own games, that will force the other women to improve, and that can only be good for ladies' darts. And you can see that with Lisa. She's a cut above. She showed that in the World Championships. Anastasia showed her class. And I think the women's tournament this year at Lakeside is going to be really, really exciting, because it's given them another platform to show just how good the ladies can be, just how well they can score, and really push for, in the BDO, better prize money and longer matches, but also send more of a message to the PDC that, yeah, these women can play and they deserve a spotlight as well.
Yeah, and I think that first set from Lisa Ashton was the perfect advert to say to the PDC guys, this is why you chose two ladies to compete at the William Hill World Darts Championship. 107 average in that first set from Lisa Ashton. It was some scintillating stuff for the Lancashire Rose. And like I say, that is a message to Barry Hearn to say, you've let these ladies have a go, and what a performance they put in. Even Anastasia's match with Ryan Joyce, she was right in there. And look at what Ryan Joyce has gone on to do now into the quarterfinals of the PDC World Darts Championship. So Lisa and Anastasia certainly did show the BDO and ladies' darts in a great light.
Oh, it was stunning performance. It really was. And I'm really looking forward to the Ladies World Championships at Lakeside. I think it's going to be a great competition. couple of observations from the finders that I'm going to take away. Fallon and Lita in the same half of the draw for Lakeside. So that's a potential semi-final matchup, which should be absolutely brilliant. Best of three sets again. And someone I did see at the finders was Dita Hedman, and she looked quite poor. Her averages were quite low, sort of 59, I think, in her opening game, slightly higher in the second game, but still nowhere near her best. And she, in the first round, plays Maria O'Brien. If she plays to that standard again, she could be a shock early exit and let Maria O'Brien make a name for herself as well.
Yeah, really, I do really think there could be some potential shock results in the ladies as well as the men's at Lakeside. We've seen a lot of shocks at the PDC World Darts Championship over the last few weeks. 9 out of the top 16 players crashing out, and I really do think that the seeds could potentially tumble at Lakeside. You mentioned Maria O'Brien there. She's probably been playing some of the best darts of her career at the moment. She reached the final of the PDC World Championship qualifier, losing out to Lisa Ashton on that 1-3-2 finish. She beat Dita Hedman in the semis, if I'm right in saying that. And Dita's been inconsistent during the Finder Masters, a 74 average in the quarterfinals and a 59 average in the next game. So there's inconsistency there, but Dita's yet to sort of win a BDO World Championship title, and she'll be really hungry for that. But consistency is the key in this tournament. It's set play can be so demanding as well. It's so different to leg play. It is so important, set play. I mean, you can play really well in a set and then still end up losing it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's a totally different format. You've seen at the World Championships that PDC won that you can win as many legs as the person you're playing against, and you could end up losing 4-1. The set play can often be quite misleading, and often it's a case of who's got more stamina. Because the BDO Tour is full of short, quick-fire, best-of-7, best-of-9, best-of-11 matches. To suddenly go a best-of-13 setter, it's about who can sustain the scoring, who can sustain the doubles, and when both of them start to go on the wane, who's got the mental aspect to just stay up there unfazed and just keep going and not get frustrated. It promises to be a great tournament, and I love the World Championships every year. I enjoy set play in darts. I think it has the potential for a lot more shocks, and for my money, it's a lot more entertaining as well. I like long games, so the World Championships are perfect for me.
Yes, and I'm just going to move into the men's side from the Finder Darts Masters. Glenn Durrant winning the tournament yet again for a third time. A 5-3 victory over Richard Veenstra, who put in quite a performance himself. Glenn was 3-1 down at one point in that game, and he must have been thinking that Richard was sort of going to run away with it. But there was some fantastic stuff from Dunn. There was a 170 finish in there, numerous 180s and a 100.6 average over 8 sets. That was fantastic, and we'll hear from Glenn in a little while on the show. But Glenn Durrant, once again, Andrew, played absolutely superbly.
Oh, Glenn was brilliant throughout the tournament. In the group stage, he hit almost a 102 average against Scott Waits, just shy of 90 against Gary Robson. It was a lower quality game, but it was still enough to get him to top the group. Then he beat Conan Whitehead, again, 94 average. Then he beat McGeaney, just shy of 100, and then was absolutely just, you could not stop him in that final. Even though Veenstra was 3-1 ahead, you still felt that Durrant was probably the favourite. He had that more big tournament, big match final experience. And in the end, it came through because his scoring just was outstanding. And to be honest, I was shocked in a sense that Richard got to the final, because he'd not actually played tremendously well before that. He played an out-of-sorts Dean Reynolds in the group stage and ended up getting a fairly easy win. He beat Wesley Harms 5-4 in a game that Wesley really should have won. Wesley missed far too many doubles. Scored tremendously, and they just squandered opportunities. And as can often happen in a best of nine game, you only need to make one or two mistakes and you're punished. And then in the next few games, Richard's average was never tremendous, but he sort of waded it out in a sense and just did enough to win without really blowing you away. But that's Richard's first major BDO final. I thought he acquitted himself well, and he played his best darts of the tournament in the final against Glenn, which is what you need to do. You need to raise your standard against the best players. So it's a good run for Richard, and good preparation for Lakeside, even if throughout the tournament he wasn't as impressive as him being in the final might have suggested.
Yeah, I do know in the last show you was sort of tipping Wesley Harms to do well at the Lakeside World Championship, and like you say, Wesley Harms missed, I think it was 5 or 6 match darts against Richard Veenstra. Veenstra really did ride his luck on that occasion. He spoke about Glenn Durrant's averages throughout the competition. Durrant averaged 101.69 in a 5-4 victory over Scott Waits. I think he was 4-1 down or 4-0 down in that game in the last 16. That was quite a comeback from Duzza.
Yeah, it was tremendous, yeah. Scott was another one who, in the first game against Gary Robson, Scott looked quite poor, but then really showed a lot better account of himself in the second game. But Duzza, again, was just irrepressible. High scoring, accuracy on the doubles. You can never count the man out. He's just, by far and away, the best player on the BDO. And I thought he showed that throughout the tournament. He was genuine, was really impressive.
Yeah, Glenn Durrant was probably, you could say, the most consistent player over the weekend and a deserved winner. Just looking at the semi-final results, Jim Williams beaten 3-1 by Richard Veenstra. Similar averages, 89 to 87. Glenn Durrant in a fabulous semi-final with Mark McGee. Did you catch much of that game? That was a fantastic semi-final.
Yeah, I did. I thought Mark was actually really impressive. I'm someone who's been quite critical of McGeaney in the past because his scoring's never really been there for me. He's good on the doubles, but he's not a big scorer. But I thought in this tournament, actually, he was quite impressive. He was in a really tricky group with Michael Unterbuchner and Andy Hamilton. All three games in that group finished 5-4. But then he was brilliant against Scott Mitchell in the quarterfinals and hit a very similar average against Duzza. And if those two end up meeting in at some point at Lakeside, it would have to be the final. But if those two meet again this year, I think it'll be as competitive as it was last year. I thought Mark gave a really good account of himself and did well in that semi-final. And to be honest, for me, he was the most impressive person in that tournament other than Duzza. It's just a shame they ended up meeting in the semi-finals and not the final.
And just before we speak to our first guest on the show, Daniel Day, sort of, what do you make of his chances for Lakeside?
I think Dan's got a good chance. He's going to say to us, but he was disappointed with the way the finders went with two narrow defeats in his group. But Dan's had a good year. He won Romania at the start of the year, and then he won the Category A Swedish Open in August. It was a massive win for him, his first Category A. He's got himself into the top 16. He's become a dad again this year. That's a lot of motivation for him. I think Dan's a great player, and I think he really does have a chance. He's playing Dean Reynolds first round. Dean did not look good at the finals, and he's had quite a poor year. So I think Dan's probably the favourite there. And you move on to a tie, probably against Jim Williams, if you go on seeding, although as we've seen, that's not always the best thing to go by. But him against Jim, I think Dan, if he's playing his best, he's got every chance in the world. And you beat someone like Jim, then you're really on par to beat anyone. So I think Dan's got a really good chance.
Yeah, and speaking of Daniel Day, here is what Andrew had to say with Daniel Day, and here's the interview, guys.
So we're a couple of weeks removed now from your debut at the Finder Masters in the Netherlands, where you played quite well, but you lost a couple of close games. How are you feeling about your game right now?
Yeah, I'm feeling confident. I mean, the results did go my way at the finders. Just a couple of doubles missed, really. When I took out a 1-2-5 to go 4-3 up against Walter in my first game, should have seen the game out, really. I had the throwing, obviously, one of them legs. So I should have seen the game out there. And against Scott, again, I played well. He was 4-3 out. I left 82 and he took the 1-16 out. But, yeah, I feel I'm playing well. It's just a bit of finishing, really. Just got to tidy up on that.
Okay.
Yeah, apart from that, I'm feeling good.
Good. Obviously, that form's going to benefit you, and that's kind of been the story of your year. Because since this time last year, you've won titles in Romania and Sweden, and you moved into the top 16 of the rankings. So 2018's been a pretty good year for you.
Yeah, it's been brilliant, yeah. I mean, getting picked for England as well, was massive. I made a cut in the finals previous year, and obviously not to win them, you think, oh, well, am I going to get over the line? But, in Romania, I played quarter there, actually, and I think I was 5-1 down and come back and won that 6-5, which is always nice. And then, obviously, to win Sweden, a Category A, was just massive, you know, just such a confidence boost. And, you know, for all the sort of pretty much the whole of the top 32 there, to win a competition like that is fantastic. And then obviously to go on with England as well, to win the Euro Cup overall, and then the pairs with Scott Mitchell was just a great year.
In that Sweden Open, you beat a number of top ranked players, so that must give you a lot of confidence.
Yeah, I mean, beating them makes you feel like you should be there, you know, and to win a Category A is massive, you know. Like I say, to win a competition with a whole lot of top 30s. I mean, I'm not taking nothing away from Romania. That was fantastic because I beat some great players there. Wayne Warren, like Mark Woods and Buchner, some great players, you know. But to get over that with Category A, you know, obviously with Glenn Durant and Mark McGinney and so on there, it's massive, you know.
Yeah, it's a big achievement. Obviously, another big thing for you this year was you became a dad for the second time. And we've heard players in recent months, especially James Wade, talk about how having children's given them an extra motivation. Do you think that's the same for you?
Yeah, definitely, certainly. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I play for them. You know, I want to do my best and do it as well as I can for them. Really, I mean, my form sort of come about when I found out I was having my first child. My game went through the roof there, to be honest, and that's where I felt I'd become a better player. I don't know what it was. I can't understand it. I suppose it's just the buzzing that makes you happier, you know. And yeah, it definitely changes you.
And I'm sure that will encourage you moving into Lakeside. And your rise in 2018 has meant you've qualified for all the major BDO competitions, to the World Trophy. You obviously played at the World Masters, where you played Adam Smith Leo, and obviously now the Finders as well. But yeah, in all the TV majors, you've suffered early exits in close games. Does that bother you at all, heading into Lakeside?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, not the results I wanted. I mean, I started really well against Ross in the World Trophy early on in the year. Yeah, he obviously played very well. I think he ended up with like a 94 average, and I ended up with just over 30. So it was a good, like 90 average. I think it was a good game, you know, very close. He obviously stepped out and played better, obviously, with me. He had to play well because I started so well against him. Well, Masters was disappointing, to be honest. So I come away from that quite frustrated. I didn't play at all well against Adam. It was a game I fancied to win, to be honest. I mean, I won't take nothing away from him. Obviously, went on to win World Masters, which was fantastic for him. I've got to try and take the positives. You know, I feel like I have played well in them events, apart from, like I say, the World Masters. So, just go, you know, a little bit of luck's got to go your way. You know, sometimes it's a clip of a double going in, or, you know, they miss it, your opponent misses a double and you step in, and that can change a game. So
you think it's a case of luck that's not let you have that big breakthrough, rather than maybe not feeling right form-wise, or not having maybe practised enough?
I think it's my doubles. I think, you know, sometimes I do tend to miss doubles at the wrong time, you know. And you know, obviously when you're playing these guys, you can't miss at all. You can't afford to miss. So, going forward, though, I've been working on my game, on my doubles especially. I know the scoring's there. So that's all my preparation will be for Lakeside now, is just to keep practising my doubles and hope they go in. Yeah.
Talking of Lakeside, you're playing Dean Reynolds in the opening round. What did you make of that draw?
It's tough because Dean's one of my really good friends on the tour. We sit together, we get on very, very well. That's always tough playing a friend, but I've sort of got to ignore that. There's no easy draw. Everyone is there because they deserve to be there, so you're never going to get an easy draw. I see him at the Finders, and we just said, let's have a good game, and hopefully that's where we'll be.
Lakeside this year was affected by the late announcement of where it was going to happen, if it was going to happen at all, where the TV would be. Did that affect your preparation, or the preparation of your fellow players at all?
I don't think so. I think we always knew there was going to be a World Championships. Where it was going to be was obviously a different story. I think we spoke to Glenn a little while ago. I think the Finders is a good sort of tee up before Lakeside. You know, it's very well run. I mean, it's fantastic over there how it's all set up and everything. So, yeah, I mean, mean, if you're preparing for the Finders, you've only got sort of 2 or 3 weeks. You know, you've got the World Masters and you haven't got long to the Finders, and then obviously Lakeside follows on, so you're always playing, there's always time. You don't sort of particularly prep just for Lakeside because you're playing in other conferences leading up to it, so...
That's very true. And obviously, there are an awful lot of tournaments on the BDO Tour. Do you think that's a good thing for keeping your competitive streak going, or can it sometimes be a bit of a blow if you're struggling for form?
It's hard. I mean, it's sort of, there's not a lot of let up with it, you know, because obviously, if you're picking up points and you're defending, you sort of feel obliged to go back to that place to try and defend them points all the time. So it is a very sort of heavy schedule.
It must also be hard balancing the playing and wanting to defend your points, practicing. With obviously most of you work and you've got family lives as well.
I work sort of 50-hour weeks as it is. Obviously 2 children under the age of 3, and then practicing weekends away, you know, straight back to work. So yeah, it's tough, but we all do it, we all love it. So we all obviously try and do our best. So.
Last year, a lot was made of how much playing at Lakeside meant to you. And it was something you dreamed about for a long time. Did you feel nervous at all last year? Was there a sense of pressure or expectation on you because you'd visualised that moment for so long?
Yeah, I think what happens is, I don't know if other players feel the same, but I certainly did. You played for a lot of years. I mean, I played since I was 14, 15, and, you know, you watch World Championships on telly and you think it'll never happen to you. You know, you watch other people qualify, like, you know, and you think, oh, well, I'm as good as him. I know I'm as good as him. I can do it. And when it actually happens, it's a bit surreal. But I felt good. I thought I was playing some good stuff. I mean, I was happy the way I started at Lakeside last year. I didn't play as well against Martin. I think experience sort of showed through on that and playing sort of back-to-back. But, I mean, you have doubts. You know you're playing on telly, you think, oh, well, if I don't play well, you know, you worry about your back side, I suppose, and things like that. But all you can do is prepare and do your best when you're there, sort of thing. So it's hard with a BDO because obviously there's not as many chances on telly. So you want, when you do get that one chance with Lakeside, you really want to show what you're made of, really.
So will it be a case this year of, I've been there, I've done it, I know what the stage feels like, I can just go out there and play my best darts?
Yeah, that's obviously hope. Yeah, that's what you want. You know, obviously darts is a game that's all on a day, as you know. You know, anything can happen on a day, but certainly playing there before is definitely a bonus. You know, you know what to expect. It's just little things, you know, the lighting, where the crowd is, and yeah, I mean, obviously that one, you might have a break after the first set and then you don't get another break unless it goes sort of 2 all. So using that break more effectively, yeah, I mean, definitely does help playing it before.
Talking of the Lakeside draw, you're in the same quarter as your Europe Cup pairs partner, Scott Mitchell. What would it mean if you could, say, get through to the quarterfinal stage and, say, play him?
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, you know, everyone who's there is a fantastic player. They all deserve to be there. They've all grinded it out over the course of the season, you know. Obviously, just to play Dean first round is great. I think second round would be like Jim, who's good friends with Jim, you know. We were part of the same sponsorship for a while as well. So, yeah, it'd be great. And then, obviously, to play Scott, you know, we're good friends now. We played to England, but for England together, and we had a great time in Hungary. It was brilliant. So, yeah, I just want to go as far as I can and play and hopefully beat as many as I can.
You mentioned a little bit before that you started playing darts 14, 15. How was it that you got into darts in the first place?
My mum always played. My mum was, she's always played like a local league. She played a little bit of county after that, went up with me at the same time. She's always been a good player, and that's what sort of pushed me forward.
In the past, you've played on the Challenge Tour. You played some players' championship events.
Yes.
And with the new rules in place for next year, what will 2019 hold for Dan Day?
I will be going to Hughes School. Entry is actually already in for that. And, yeah, I mean, obviously, I would like to achieve getting my tour card, to be honest. I'm not going to lie. You know, the BDO, thanks you to the BDO for giving us that chance to do that. You know, like I say, the BDO is quite grueling, obviously, with the I know the PDC, obviously, if you get your tour cards, you are away a lot of the time as well, but it is more UK-based, so it'd be nice. It's nice to be sort of in the same country. If I need to get home, I can jump on a train and be home in 2 hours. I mean, particularly this year, I nearly missed out on the Finders due to points. I got an invitation, but my daughter was born when I was in Belgium, so I had to rush home from Belgium to get there, the birth of. So, obviously, being you know, it's not just obviously going forward, you know, the money side of the PDC, you know, the more opportunities to play on telly if you can get to that sort of level. Yeah, there's a lot of factors obviously in my decision, but I love playing the BDO. It's given me a good platform to move forward, but I would like to try the PDC.
I mean that does make sense, the money on offer, especially with you having two young children. But with the new rules in place, do you think that decision will be made by a lot of players? I know Glenn Durrant and Mark McGeaney have already said they're going to go, but do you think a lot of other players will take advantage of the newfound freedoms that seem to be on offer, with the knowledge that if they don't get a talker, they can come back to the BDO?
Yeah, I think you'd be mad not to be honest. You know, you've got 4 days to try and qualify. Yeah, I can't see. And then obviously if it doesn't work out, then you can go back and you haven't lost anything. You know, you're back to sort of square one and back to doing your BDO tour. So, yeah, I think you'll see a lot of players, to be honest. A hell of a lot of players go.
One thing I did want to ask, your walk-on song on A Ragga Tip, what's the story behind that?
I don't know, to be honest. I think I used to play for London and we had a great season at London. There was myself, Conan Whitehead, Ross Smith, Steve Douglas and Lewis McGurn. We had a good season together at London, and I just think it was to do with a day. Obviously the sound of the tune is a bit like my last name, so that's where it all come from. So it gets the crowd going a little bit, so.
Well, that's what it's all about when you're on those big television events, is getting the crowd fired up and behind you. For Lakeside, how far do you realistically think you can go?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, same as everyone will say, you know, take it one game at a time. Just want to get through that first game, really. Just get comfortable, like I say, having playing there the year last year, take that experience now. Yeah, who knows? Need one good week of your life, you know. If it all comes together in that week, then who knows? You know, there's been a lot of first-time winners. There's been players who've been there before and for a few years and then done it on their particular tip. You know, it's just got to come together on that one week.
Of the rest of the people in the draw, who would you say is a name to really watch, aside from yourself, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, you've always got your Glenn, obviously, going for his third world title. Obviously, Mark were getting very unlucky last year. Jim Williams had a great season. He's been playing well. You know, obviously playing the Grand Slam this year. Michael Winterbuckner playing well. Yeah, there's a lot of names in there who could do well this year.
Thank you very much, Dan. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
And good luck for Q School as well.
And now then, guys, we're going to move slowly on to the final preview for the BDO World Darts Championship in 2019. Which gets underway on the 5th of January at the Lakeside Country Club. Andrew, firstly, we're going to kick off with the ladies' section of the draw. What do you make of that?
I think the ladies' draw is great. I think every tie is really competitive. I think it's probably the strongest field yet. And I think there's some tremendous first-round ties. And if things work out anyway, really, I think there should be some tremendous games us to see. I think the pick of the first round games, there's a lot that appeal, but I think that the real two standout games are Lisa Ashton against the 20 star Mikuru Suzuki. So that should be absolutely incredible. Suzuki's prodigious talent, who plays a lot of soft tip arts over in Japan. She's impressed at the World Masters the last couple of years, and she won the ladies, one half of the ladies qualifier just before the World Masters with relative ease. She's a really talented player. And I think she'll push Lisa all the way. I think, for my money, whoever wins that wins the tournament. That's a very bold thing to say, and it'll probably come back to bite me, but I would stick with that. But the other one is Dieter Hedman, Maria O'Brien, as I mentioned earlier. Dieter is obviously just a legend of the game. She's won so many trophies, but she's never won the big one, and you know she really, really wants to. Is she playing her best darts at the moment? No, not really. She's been quite inconsistent. If she's at her best, yeah, she'll beat Maria O'Brien, I would have thought. But that's not a guarantee. If she plays like she did at the World Trophy earlier in the year, where she wasn't tremendously impressive, or she plays like she did in one of the games at the Finders, I think Maria will have a fairly straightforward afternoon on her hands. So I think that tie is really interesting, because it will depend what data shows up. If it's good data, top form data that shows up, that'll be a tremendous game. But if not, that'll be a big shock, and Maria will have, she'll fancy her chances against Fallon Sherrock or Corin Hand in the second round. What about yourself?
Yeah, it's a strange one with Dieter Hedman, because she is very vulnerable when it comes to the World Championship. I remember her losing to Casey Gallagher. It was last year or the year before. She went out very early in the competition. But her averages suggest that she is pretty inconsistent. Some days it's a 59 average, some days it's an 85, then it could be a 75. So all depends on which Dieter Hedman does turn up. But the World Championship is a tournament which has escaped her in the past, so she might be putting in the hard work as we speak now to be ready for Lakeside, and who knows. But that game is key for the tournament as well. I think the winner of that game could well go on to reach the final at Lakeside. Speaking of Lisa Rashton and Mikuru Suzuki, that could be a blockbuster of a game. Lisa the overwhelming favourite, but Suzuki can get a 14-5 with the bookies, which is quite good odds. And Dieter Hedman, to go out the competition, is also 17-10. So if there is some upsets, there really is some money to be made there. And it's certainly going to be an interesting tournament, because easily Lisa Ashton and Dieter Hedman could be out the competition in the first 2 days. It's certainly going to be an interesting weekend at the Lakeside Country Club. The first two matches on the Saturday are in the ladies section, Lisa Ashton and Mikuru Suzuki, at 3:30 on Saturday the 5th of January, which is followed by Sharon Prinz versus Roz Bulmer at 8:15 on the Saturday evening.
Yeah, I think Sharon Roz is an interesting game. Sharon's a good player who's yet to really get her breakthrough win. This will be her 6th appearance at Lakeside. She's a 2-time semi-finalist. She's a really, really solid player. And then she's going up against Roz Bulmer, who had a breakthrough there this year. She was named the Ladies BDO Personality of the Year. She got to the semi-finals, I think it was, of the World Trophy. She really got a good account of herself, got herself into the top 14 of the ladies' rankings. And she's a really good player. I think that match is a 50-50. You'd go with Sharon on the grounds of experience. She's been there before. And we've seen more of her, so we know what her game's about. But I think Roz is a really good talent as well. And you know she'll be up for it on a Lakeside debut. So I think that's a really interesting game. And two great adverts to kick off the ladies' tournament. And again, show what the ladies' game's all about.
Yeah, we spoke about Dieter Hedman and Maria O'Brien, but the game on Sunday evening could be another brilliant match between Fallon Sherrock and Corinne Hammond, the former Lakeside World finalist. Well, both of them have been Lakeside finalists, and it should be another fantastic match between the two.
Yeah, I think that's another great game. Corinne, a veteran of Lakeside now, it's about her 4th appearance in consecutive years. She lost last year to Fallon in the first round, and I wouldn't be shocked to see her lose again. Fallon at the Finders was incredibly impressive. I think she's had a really, really good year. There was that stretch in June where I think she won about 6 events in a row. I think she's a prodigious talent, and I really do fancy her this year to really make a name for herself. So I think that one's a close one, but my money would be on Fallon.
And on Monday evening, there's just one match in the ladies side of the BDO World Championship. Anastasia Dobromyslova, who of course played at the PDC World Championship, she takes on Laura Turner, who will be definitely up for this BDO World Championship on her debut. How do you see that one going, Andrew?
I mean, that's a tough one. Anastasia went to Ali Pali and gave a tremendous account of herself. Great in the first set. Just when you thought she'd gone out of it, in the third set she fought with everything. Did herself proud, got a good average, wasn't as good as Lisa's, but it was still good. There's no shame in a 77 average at all, especially when, again, they're not used to playing matches of that length. I thought Anastasia was great, and that will obviously give her all the momentum in the world. She's had a good year in 2018. She won 4 ranking events. But I'm really looking to see how Laura gets on. Laura got into the rankings for this event quite late on. She won her first event this year at the British Classic, but she's also reached the semi-final of 6 other competitions. I know Laura's quite well involved with the social media and the website of the BDO now, which has stepped up over the last few months. And I know she's passionate about Dart, she's passionate about the game, and she's passionate about the BDO. So it's a really nice opportunity for her, and I genuinely think she's not there to make up the numbers at all. I think she's a really good talent, and I think she'll give Anastasia a run for her money, but after that showing at Ali Pali, you can't back against Anastasia. She's been to that stage before, and you'll know she'll want title number four.
Yeah, just moving into the final three games of the first round. On Tuesday, the 8th of January, Eileen de Graaf faces Paula Jacqueline at 3:30 in the afternoon. This is quite an open game because Eileen de Graaf has not had the best of years, but Paula Jacqueline is really coming into some form.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Eileen's had a good year in the sense that she's won 9 ranking events, but at the same time, when you compare her to the other top players on the ladies tour, you think, well, she's not won any of the big ones. A big win was in Denmark, but I mean, you look at obviously what the other ladies have won, it's not quite as impressive. But Eileen is a good player, and she has been to Lakeside before. It'll be appearance number 6 for her. And you go against Paula Jacqueline, who will be making a 4th appearance and is yet to win a game at Lakeside. And Paula is also one of the older women in the competition as well. I think Paula's got a chance, but I really would fancy Eileen. But she shocked me in the past by going out early. So it could go either way. But again, I would lean towards the seeded player. But it could go either way.
And in the evening session, Lorraine Wynn Stanley, who is playing some brilliant stuff at the minute, she faces Kesa Gallagher, who could prove to be another tough customer. Obviously, she knocked out Dieter Hedman a year or two ago, and she's could be very tough to deal with.
Yeah, that's a tough one, and I'm leaning towards Casey to spring the surprise here. I think Lorraine has had a good year, but interestingly, she might be top seed for this tournament, but since the rankings have come out, she has slipped to the number 6 in the ladies' rankings. So it's not perhaps indicative of the year she's had, her seeding, but she's won 3 events this year. Most recently, she won in Northern Ireland. Lorraine is a really good player, and she's been to Lakeside before. She's only ever reached the semi-finals before, so you'll know she'll want to win. But Casey beat her at the World Masters in the quarterfinals 4-0 in pretty convincing fashion, and I would not be shocked at all to see Casey do it again. She's had a really good year. She got to the final of the World Masters competition. She won Antwerp this year as well. And, yeah, I'm leaning towards Casey to be a big upset in that first round.
And on Wednesday, the 9th of January, Trina Gulliver, the 10 times BDO World Champion, takes on Karolina Podorska. You've certainly talked up Karolina Podorska's chances, Andrew, over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those where I've probably made a fool of myself, but I think Caroline is a really good talent. She did well at the ladies qualifier to get to Lakeside. She beat Laura Turner in that competition as well. So she did well, and it's very hard to win that competition where you've got to beat 6-7 people in the course of a day. She did do well. She has won a couple of events this year in Romania and Poland. She hasn't been playing darts that long. So I think this is a really good opportunity, and I think she could surprise a lot of people. And Trina isn't the biggest scorer. So she's not the sort of person like Lisa Rushton, who on your first appearance, you might be a bit nervous. She might just blow you away completely. Trina is obviously immensely experienced, but I think Carolina's one to watch. And I wouldn't be shocked to see her spring the surprise.
And in terms of picking a winner for the 2019 BDO Ladies World Championship, it's the usual suspects. Lisa Ashton, the favourite to pick up the title on the 13th of January, even, which you can get at evens. Anastasia Dromyslova, second favourite, as you'd expect. Dieter Hedman, third favourite, along with Fallon Sherrick. So it's the four names that you'd expect to see there in the latter stages of the tournament.
Yeah, And I think, in a sense, it's a difficult one because that bottom half of the draw is so strong. You've got Ashton, Suzuki, Hedman and Sherratt all in that bottom half. So a couple of them are going home early. Whereas in the top half, you spring a couple of surprises, it suddenly opens out a lot more and you could well see someone make the final for the first time. But you can't look past Ashton. You can't see what she did at Ali Pali and convincingly say that someone's going to beat her. But I would go Ashton. And if it's not Ashton, I will say Sherratt or Suzuki.
Yeah, and quickly, before we do move on to the men's side of the 2019 BDO World Darts Championship, I managed to grab a chat with the back-to-back BDO Men's World Champion, Mr. Glenn Durrant. Check it out.
Hello, Glenn, and thank you very much for agreeing to come on so soon, obviously, after the success at the Finder Darts Masters over in the Netherlands. What a weekend for yourself. Third time now that you've won the Finder Darts Masters, and it was quite a weekend. You was embroiled in a couple of good matches. Obviously, that victory over Richard Veenstra in the final as you recovered from a 3-1 deficit to win 5-3 in that particular final. And, of course, that fantastic epic clash with Matt Beghini, which was another terrific game. Just reflecting on the weekend, Glenn, how are you feeling after winning the Finder Darts Masters for the third time?
Hello, Tom. Yeah, nice to hear you from you. Absolutely delighted to win the Finder Masters for the third time, if truth be told. I always sort of said it was like the mock exam, really, for Lakeside, and you're always thinking, are you in a good position going into Lakeside? Is your practice regime working? But this time I came off sort of the disappointments from the World Masters and the Grand Slam, where it was a bit of sort of being unlucky at that one, whereas the Masters, I really kicked myself at losing that game. Usually games I win when I go two sets to nil up. So, you know, Chris Mason said a few months back that, you know, the PDC players have time in between each competition, really, because they can lose a competition then go straight back the next week and they're in another big competition. I was sort of left to stew and, you know, think about them losses, and it was quite difficult. But that's the beauty of darts. You know, it's the highs, the lows of the game. They're absolutely incredible. So, you know, the difficult thing was getting back on the practice board when you've had disappointment. So going into the Finder Masters, I knew they were calling it the group of death, which I seem to be sort of associated with, you know, whether it's the Grand Slam or the Finder Masters. And knew I was playing, you know, Gary Robson, who's had a terrific season, probably his best for a while. And Scott Waite is obviously always up there as one of the best players in the BDO. And no matter what competition we're in, he's always going to be there right at the top and one of the favourites. Competition started. I remember going 4-1 down to Scott Waite. And I thought, you know, this could be over before it even began. And when I looked up at 4-1, he wanted 36 after 9 darts. And I wanted 91, so I remember hitting a big bullseye, 9, double 16, to pull it back to 4-2, and I can't remember an awful lot after that, but I just knew I'd got back in the game, because I was actually even thinking, even if I lose 5-3, 5-4 here, it still gives me opportunity if I beat, you know, Robson 5-1, 5-2, so I knew every leg counted, so that was really important. But yeah, you know, the busy month coming up. I'm back in Wolverhampton at the weekend for an exhibition, and I've got some work in Wales over Christmas. But really, I'll just be replicating what I've done the past few years now and practicing really hard. Looking forward to the PDC starting, the World Championships. That sort of gets your juices flowing a little bit, and I'll be a big fan of that. And looking at. Some fantastic darts, and you know that really makes you want to practice as well when you're seeing people playing so amazingly well, and lots of good friends in the PDC, so keen to see how they're getting on. So really all is good, feeling really good, back at work today. Just sat having my dinner now and thought I'd answer a couple of questions to you, so you know, feel free to ask anything that you want, Tom, but right at this moment it's good position and set up nicely for Lakeside and Q School.
Yeah, just touching on the Finder Masters over at the weekend, that final with Richard Veenstra was absolutely delightful to watch. 3-1 down, came back to win 5-3, typical Glenn Durren style, really. Sort of, it's not going your way in the early phases of the game, but mentally you're stuck in there and didn't overreact to the scoreline and sort of reeled your way back, much like the Paul Hogan game. Obviously, that was a bit more under threat, with Paul just needing another leg to knock you out of the Lakeside. But what a final. 100.6 average over 8 sets is absolutely remarkable. The way you came back was brilliant. The semi-final with Mark McGeaney was also another high-quality game when you really had to produce those gilt-edge finishes when they were needed. A couple of superb finishes in that one, the 136, especially. But yeah, Glenn, over those two games in particular, you were ruthless in your finishing when you had to be, because you really were under a lot of pressure from Richard, especially when he took out that big finish, the 141, to take the set, and you came back brilliantly. But as it's been documented with yourself and other people, your mental strength is probably one of your best assets to have, because in games where you've been behind or you've suffered a result like you lost in the final to the World Masters, you've put that disappointment right to the back of your mind. You've gone away, worked away and came back strong, and you always do come back strong, Glenn, and whatever disappointment you suffer, you seem to come out the other side very, very quickly, and that's a testament to you and whatever you do behind the scenes, practice-wise. So just reflect on those two games. How did you feel about those two matches in particular, semi with Mark McGeaney and that final with Richard Veenstra?
Yeah, it's very interesting you say that. You know, I've got that game, you know, part of my game where I can come back, because historically and, you know, going back many years, I was always known to be a front runner. And you're absolutely correct in highlighting the Paul Hogan game, because I had the most immense disappointment in the year before that game when I was 4-2 up, 2-0 up, and 140 ahead of Scott Waite in a quarter final and lost. And that point was definitely the lowest moment, even a lot worse than the sort of the Martin Adams game. I could understand why you lost the Martin Adams game, but the Scott Waite one, I dominated the BDO then. So I think, if anything, I was known for being mentally quite weak and really a bit of a bully. And if I got in front, I usually sort of ran away. So I think that, you know, that mental strength sort of come with experience and, you know, and some big losses that I've had. It's good now to have it. And I definitely didn't panic against Richard Veenstra. And what was interesting, when I was stood behind him watching him throw for doubles, he was missing. But as soon as I put my head down with that hope and expectation that you're hitting a number rather than a game shot, he seemed to hit it. So, you know, you are fighting battles with yourself all the way through there, and obviously the break came right at the wrong time for Richard rather than the right time for me, because I was averaging close to 100 right away through the game, and even the first leg after the break, you know, it was a very slow start from us both. It's not like I come firing out the traps, you know, and I'm sure Richard will learn, you know, an awful lot from that. You know, it's nice to know that it's there for me whenever I need it. And, you know, it's really good for the future moving forward, because, you know, I'm never beaten now. And, you know, if you add that to the, you know, I'm also a good front runner, then I'm always going to be in the game. So that was really nice. And, you know, to come off with 100 average, I think I had 100 average early on in the competition and a 99 as well. And quite rightly, as you said, Tom, over 8 sets, that just sets me up absolutely perfectly. And, you know, the old Find a Masters, there was always that whoever won that never went on to win Lakeside. So I did break that statement a couple of years ago when I won it and then went on to Lakeside. But it's perfect practice, stage conditions, and for me it was my favourite Find a Masters I've played in so far. You know, the crowd was excellent. I don't think it really come across great on TV, because in between games, you know, I was going upstairs in the hotel room and, you know, I'm watching the games on TV, and the crowd didn't, you know, come across. But certainly when you're in the venue, that the, you know, it was really nice to play in front of. And so it's all part of the preparation of what's an amazing January to come. So yeah, very, very happy.
And with that special victory at the weekend, Glenn, and the Finder Darts Masters, it must have been so satisfying to have your wife Susan with you and some of your best friends who follow you around the circuit wherever you go. And now 3 times the Finder Darts Masters champion, 2 times back-to-back Lakeside World champion, and of course, 2 times World Masters champion. And it's been a fantastic year again for you, Glenn. Four of the BDO major events, all 4 finals, winning 3 of them. It's quite some year for you. I mean, the BDO World Championship in January, then you had the BDO World Trophy. You lost out narrowly in the final to Adam Smith-Neill in the World Masters, and now the Finder Darts Masters Champion. Just reflect on what's been a great 2018 for you so far.
Yeah, if someone had offered me to win 3 out of the 4 big ones, I'd have took that in January for sure, but it was only maybe a day or so. When someone mentioned that, had I beat Adam Smith-Neill, then I would have held all 4 of the major BDOs at the same point. And, you know, they're the kind of things that you can look back and remember with real pride and, you know, real fondness, that what a year that was. But, you know, I can't be too greedy, and especially what's happened to Adam since then. You know, I don't begrudge anybody success in anything that they do, but it would have been nice to be, you know, to hold the 4 of them at the same time. I think the photo with the 4 trophies would have looked pretty fantastic. So, yeah, it's nice to know that my worst result in, you know, inverted commas, the BDO majors this year is losing in a final. I'm definitely a stage player now rather than on the floor. You know, at times this year with the concentration levels have took its toll. So, you know, my philosophy going into Lakeside now is I feel like I'm beat anybody on that stage.
So speaking of Lakeside there, have you managed to look at the draw of the schedule as of yet? I know you're going to take every game as it comes, as you do every year. But potentially in the first round, it could be the New Zealander Mark McGrath or Adam Smith-Neill, who, of course, you know all about. And then potentially in round 2, it could be Ross Montgomery or Scott Baker. I know you're not going to look too far into the draw, as every round can be as tough as the latter rounds, as you found out with Paul Hogan a couple of years ago. So, I know you had a routine over the last few years of winning Lakeside when you've sort of been practicing in a little quiet area just outside the venue. Is that something you're going to be doing again? You surely won't ruin what is a winning formula, as you found out in the last couple of years, Glenn. And 3 Lakeside wins on the trot would be quite some achievement.
I actually, for the first time, I didn't watch the draw. And I think the only thing I was really sort of looking out for is those 3 players, Scott Baker, Carl McKinstry, Andy Hamilton, and then even Adam Smith-Neill as well, who I thought, you know, they'll be tough games for anybody. And with 4 games to go, they were all still left in the draw. So I knew that the non-seeded players, the better players, in my opinion, are in the bottom half of the draw there. But, you know, when you're looking at it, I think the seeds look stronger in the top half. It looks like a really balanced draw. I was keen to find out if I played in that opening weekend, even though I had a prelim game. There was still a potential that I could have been playing on the Sunday, so I'm really happy with the Tuesday night start. There'll be so many players out the competition before I even arrive at the venue. And I've discussed with Dennis as well what day to go and travel down, and yeah, you're absolutely right. I certainly won't be at the venue while the games are on. I do like to take myself away, and I'll continue doing that because I like it. I'm treading very well at that local club as well, so that will continue. But obviously then the news come out that Adam Smith-Neill had broken his leg or his ankle, etc. And I have been in contact with him on Twitter, and he's pretty adamant he's going to be there, but it's going to be really tough for him because that's his weight-bearing foot as well, you know. So I know that's going to be tough, but really I've just got to focus on my game and Mark McGrath, and then obviously potentially the reserve coming in as well. I don't know if that's Nick Kenny or someone's mentioned, or Jeffrey Spartakins, other people have mentioned. So, you know, and I am one of them players who do try to look out who I play, you know, either quick, either slow. Whereas you get a lot of dart players who they're just, you know, I don't care who I play next round. Well, I do, and I like to do a little bit of homework and, you know, form the games against them, do anything I could learn. So, I know it's a boring statement, take each game as it comes, but, you know, I'm already looking at a very mouth-watering bottom half of the draw there, so I'd be a fool if I looked anything past the first round. Just can't wait to get down there now.
You spoke about some of the unseeded players being potentially dangerous. I think there's a number of what you call fringe players in the BDO, players that you might not see on television every week, who are really, really good. I mean, Kyle McKinstry and Dave Parletti in particular have impressed me. They actually played each other in Bridlington, I think. I think Dave averaged like 105 and Kyle 108, and Kyle just won that one in a last leg decider, and it was a really good game. We've got Scott Baker, you've got Nick Kenny, you've got so many players who do the BDR tour week in, week out, where you don't really see on television, who can be in the future in the top three or four players in the BDO. And with Q School coming up in the BDO, of course, dropping the ban for Q School, it's going to be interesting come January to see who has a crack at Q School. And of course, if they don't get the card, they can always come back to the BDO. So that's another positive thing for the BDO.
Yeah, for me, Carl McKinstry was the standout non-seed and the guy I felt would have been my toughest first round game. What I would say is, like, you know, I mean, I've lost to Scott Baker, just, you know, these names that you're quoting there, I've lost to, you know, various other people on the floor. There's something unique and different about when they enter that Lakeside stage, and it can either make or break a person. And I've seen really good players, you know, just absolutely fall apart on that stage. So it's a difficult one to answer. And really, you know, you're always looking at people like the Scott Waiters, you know, the Scott Mitchells, the people who've been up there and won titles on that stage, because it's different. You can go into Lakeside in the best form of your life, and then you get on that stage and it just doesn't happen for you. And, you know, luckily for me, it's a stage that I love. So I think first timers, it's always really, really difficult to go there. But, you know, people have had the experience on the stage and even suffered enormous disappointments. If they go away and learn from that, then they've got every chance. And Q School, I mean, you know, the word on the street is the majority of the BDO players are going, because it's an opportunity without any sort of restrictions on what's happened to us there. And it's certainly a ruling that I appreciated, and, you know, part of me wishes it had been in, you know, maybe the past 2 years, because I think I would have had a crack at Q School then. So, exciting time. You know, some very, very dangerous players there. But and in most competitions, you know, you're always looking for a potential outsider to win it. All I would say was you need to be pretty, pretty motivated and pretty, there's a word out there that I'm looking for, in a way, to win on that stage. It's quite unique, and like I said, for someone to come in for the first time, it'd be really difficult for them to win it. I'm going to go for someone who's played on that Lakeside stage a few times, and you know, hopefully that's me.
Now then, Glenn, just moving away from the BDO just for a minute to discuss the PDC and qualifying school in January. Now, it's something that you've been wanting to do for maybe 2 to 3 years, but due to other things, you've not really been able to do it. There's people been saying, sort of, why does Glenn Durrant not give the PDC a goal? There's slightly more to it than that, but it's something you've been involved in the Grand Slam the last couple of years. You've played some fantastic matches. That 5-4 with Gary Anderson was absolutely superb. A couple of years ago, where you both held throw for 9 legs, which was an absolute epic contest. You beat Peter Wright in the group phase. You missed double 12 for a 9-dart leg against Snakebite in the last 16 back in 2017. And you've really have enjoyed the PDC experience. A 5-1 victory this year over Simon Whitlock. So that was another fantastic performance at the Grand Slam. I think you averaged 104 in that one. So you can give it to the PDC boys, and it's something that you must be so excited about doing. I know they made you very welcome when you went over to the PDC, so you must be very looking forward to life in the PDC and how you may be tested against some of the best players on the planet. Peter Wright, Michael Van Gerwen, Gary Anderson, those sort of boys. You've played against them in exhibitions and in the Grand Slam, so you must be very excited about PDC qualifying school.
Yeah, the PDC is an easy answer, really, and if the management have done what they said they've done, then the, you know, the qualifying school entries will be in now. So there was never any secret that I always wanted to do it, but I was always under restriction that if I went to Q School, then I would lose my Lakeside winnings. And I was always quite candid in the sense that no one was ever going to take 100 grand, you know, 200 grand over the 2 years off me. So it was never, and that's why it used to hurt really when people said he was too afraid to join the PDC. It was just purely the fact that if I'd have gone, I wasn't prepared to give 100 grand back without any guarantees of a qualifying place anyway, because for sure I'm not taking anything for granted on how tough that will be, and you know, if it what will be, I'm quite philosophical about the whole thing. So soon after Lakeside, etc., it's going to be really tough. But I'll be giving it my very best, and you know, the final challenge for me would be to play in the PDC. I've given myself sort of 7 years of where I'd like to still be playing darts, and you know, if I can achieve, I've achieved everything I wanted to in the BDO, and you know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to play in the PDC, but it's not that easy. And yeah, but 100% I'm going to Q School next year. The Grand Slam, and every year I've played in it, has been pretty amazing. You know, the Gary Anderson game, I always say that first leg, if someone had asked me what day it was, I would have been in. I was just soaking it all in. But yeah, I've had some good victories. You know, the Chisnell win was big for me, getting out the group and, you know, playing in the last 16. So disappointed with the way I played against Peter Wright in the quarterfinals. And, you know, I wanted to eradicate that this year. And I was desperate to play him because he's probably not playing his best darts. And I probably played Peter, you know, around about the time when he was, you know, pushing for that number one spot. This year I saw a real opportunity in the bottom half of the Grand Slam draw, and that's why I was so disappointed. But it's an amazing experience, you know, and I do take away beating Scott, you know, some of the best players, Simon Whitlock, and you know, the game against Gerwyn Price, I could have and should have won, but you learn all the time still. And you know, I was just embracing the challenge, and you know, that's what I want to do on a weekly basis now. So they're all in the memory bank, you know, they're all there, and I'm wanting to play these guys. And you know, I've just I dare not dream too far, because you know, getting to Q School is going to be, you know, as tough as winning Lakeside this year, probably, you know, tougher. So we'll see what will be. I'm very, very proud of what I've achieved in the game. I've definitely over exceeded what my talent is. You know, my success has been down to hard work and determination, and you know, I'm still looking forward to the future. And you know, if that's in the PDC, that'd make me a very happy man.
Obviously, Glenn, over the last 3 to 4 years, you have been spearhead, the ambassador for the British Darts organisation, winning absolutely everything that there is to win. Now, with you obviously going to Q School and possibly moving away from the BDO on a permanent basis, sort of, who do you think could contest the top three places in the BDO? Obviously, your good friend Jim Williams, he's obviously one that we've been looking at. He was the number one seed at the weekend at the Finder Darts Masters, and he's probably the next one to make that next step up to possibly the BDO number one. And then who would your top 3 to 4 players be sort of in the BDO? Obviously, with Q score coming up, it's hard to sort of put your finger on who's going to stay and who isn't. So I understand it's a difficult question, but who do you see being in the top three of the British organisation in the next couple of years?
That's a good question, that, Tom, and I've not really thought about it much, because so many players are going to be going to Q School. It'd be interesting to see who still sees their future in the BDO. Yeah, of course, Jim's young enough, but you know, he's talked about going to Q School too, and you know, he'll only know when he's ready to go, just sort of like most people are. You know, some fantastic people on the circuit. You know, I think Scott Mitchell is always my favourite up there. He's so solid, and you know, if he plays really well, he's the toughest competitor on the BDO. You know, Mark McGeaney's shown, you know, no secret that he's going to Q School, so he'd be on that list along with Jim. Carl McKinstry, I think if he did the full circuit, he seems to have gone really quiet, because you know, his intention is to go to Q School. You know, so the people you're naming who were all in there, it could be an interesting top 8 in the BDO. But someone asked me yesterday, what happens if the top 16 from the BDO get the qualifying card? And I said that won't happen, because you know, some of the people who were trying to renew the tour cards, and young lads who were bypassing sort of the BDO going, and yeah, you know, it's not going to happen that all the qualifiers will come from the BDO. So interesting question. I'm going to be watching a couple of young kids. I practiced with Keane Barry at the weekend, and obviously I sponsored Nathan Van Gerven for the Finders Masters, and Leighton Bennett from Lincolnshire. You know, all these kids that were coming through, and you know, the future's in a fantastic place at the moment. And you know, I genuinely hope the BDO is too. I just hope, you know, they've got a 9 TV deal now over the next 3 years, and they've got a business plan and a strategy, you know, in place with Des Jacklin, you know, and you know, there's a strong possibility I can still be in the BDO next year, and you know, and all my dreams of what the PDC could be. You know, the difference with me is I'm just shy of 50 now, and I always sort of said it's now or never. And I feel like I'm playing the best darts of my life. You know, just coming off a Founders Masters with 300 averages out of six games. You know, I'm in a good place. So, yeah, tough question. But, yeah, I think Jim Williams is young enough. You know, there's so many. Dave Paoletti, who you mentioned earlier, is superb player. Scott Waite, you know, whether or not he's still thinking of PDC. I didn't really ask him. Scott Mitchell. You know, all these players, you know, fantastic players who could do a job in both the BDO or the PDC.
Glenn, over the last 24 hours, I've been asking people on Twitter to send in any questions that they may have to you, and I've got a few to read out to you now. And the first one coming in from the 1983 world champion, Keith Diller, regarding the picture I posted on Twitter with the shirt and the presentation of the Lakeside last year. He says, Glenn, which table did you take the cloth off to make in that shirt? I've got an interesting question here from Matt over on Twitter, Glenn. He says, did you find it harder to win the first title or to retain it? And lastly, Andrew Dugan has got in touch over on Twitter, Glenn, and he says, you've got a lot of exhibitions planned in 2019, but which one are you looking forward to the most?
Yes, what was I thinking in relation to that shirt? And it looked pretty appalling, so I think Keith Deller has a point there. Definitely the first title was the toughest, and obviously, you know, the most emotional. I think that was especially that based on the defeat that I'd had against Adams and Waits, and you're thinking, is it ever going to happen? So, you know, that moment I fell to my knees is something that no one will ever take away from me. And then last year, obviously, the luck I had in coming back from 4-1 down to Jim will live in the memory. And of course, the final is, you know, what people want to talk about when Mark missed double 18 to win the title. So, you know, I've certainly rode my luck a little bit in winning both the titles. So it'd be nice to win it this year, just without too much drama and putting my family through hell at times, for, you know, whatever. And it's a good question from a good friend in Andrew. My favourite exhibition I'm looking forward to next year is with the Kings of Darts and Modus Darts in Holland in January. I mean, the lineup is Van Gerwen, Taylor, Barney, Peter Wright, myself, Van der Voort, Martin Adams, Roland Scholten. And you know what? A couple of times I've looked at that poster and sort of pinched myself a little bit of really how far I've come. And, you know, just to be on them three events is pretty special. And I play Vincent in all three of the games, like in England versus rest of the world competition, and I'm sure ticket sales will be fantastic for that. So, but they just keep on coming. Modus Darts have been fantastic with me, and you know, I've got good relationships with Davey Anson, and Paul Starr has got me some work, and you know, the list goes on. Paul Wilson has got me work, so it looks like another busy 2019, because 2018 was incredible on the exhibition circuit, and some fantastic wins I had. And you know, meeting Phil Taylor is definitely been the highlight, and I'm working with him in Germany in three weekends in 2019. So, you know, my final words were, I continue to live the dream. Nice talking to you, Tom.
A big thanks to Duzzer Glenn Durantner for his insight following the Finder Darts Masters victory in the Netherlands over the weekend. And I, for one, wish Glenn all the best at Lakeside as he looks to win his third successive BDO World Darts Championship title, and of course PDC Q School in January. It's going to be very interesting to see how Glenn gets on over the 4 days.
So Andrew, we're going to move on to the BDO World Championship Men's Division. This is certainly a wide open tournament. It could be anybody's. Glenn Durant, of course, the back-to-back BDO World Darts Champion, as we just heard from Glenn just a couple of minutes ago. There's some big names in the tournament. I'm just going to start with the schedule for the event. Saturday the 5th of January, starting off at 1:05 over on Eurosport. Mark McGeaney against Dirk Telneckers. Mark McGeaney, in my opinion, he should win that one comfortably.
Yeah, I was, say a month or so ago, I would have said, oh, I fancy Dirk to spring the upset, youngest player in the competition. He's a real talent. And then I saw them both at the Finders. And Mark just looked on another level. He's got the experience, and yeah, he probably should win that one.
Yeah, I think Mark has got a newfound confidence as well. He's got a couple of new sponsors on board. He's being looked after by Dunvegan Enterprises, which of course look after the likes of Gary Anderson, Michael Smith, Chris Dolby, Ian White. And also Unicorn have just sponsored Mark as well, manufacturers. So that must give him so much confidence moving forward that such huge names within the sport of darts want Mark involved. And I've seen him improve even since the Grand Slam. I've seen him. He just looks so more comfortable, and his scoring gets better and better and better. Dirk Tellner, because I was still quite impressed with him at the Finders. His scoring was brilliant, but the finishing side of things sort of let him down towards the end of match.
Yeah, and I think that's just an experience thing with Dirk, really. He's a young bloke. But in a sense, I think Dirk did benefit from having one of the slightly weaker groups. He had Martin Kleermacher, who was making his kind of BDO major debut, and Ross Montgomery, who's not had a tremendous year, who squeaked past Kleermacher and then just got whitewashed by Telnikis. So, I don't know. McGeaney did look incredibly impressive, and having all those new sponsors on board must make him feel like he's being treated like more of a big deal than he was in the past. We know he's going off to Q school. He's got all the momentum in the world, all the reasons to be confident, and you'll know he wants to go one better than he did last year. So I think that should be a good first round and a good way to get him rolling again.
Yeah, and the second game on Saturday afternoon, Jim Widmeyer takes on Nigel Hayden, which is a toss of a coin, really, but the odds definitely in the way of Nigel Hayden on this one, 2-7 compared to 11-4 for the man from New York, Jim Widmeyer.
Yeah, and I think that's probably just a case of we've seen more of Hayden. He's a former PDC Tour card holder. He's been to major tournaments in the past. Whereas Widmeyer is an American player who, for the most part, kind of bookies and so on, don't see very often. He's been to Lakeside twice before, but he's not someone that regularly crops up in the big tournaments because he's over in America. So it's a difficult one. You'd fancy Hayden because he went on a tremendous run that weekend at the World Masters and the qualifier, and he's probably got more big match experience. But I wouldn't write off Widmeyer, but you're right to think that Hayden's the favourite.
And the next game on Saturday afternoon, Martin Phillips, the Pride of Wales, takes on Conan Whitehead. Now, Martin Phillips is surprisingly the favourite for this one. This year we've certainly seen a lot more of Conan Whitehead as Phillips has sort of wound it down a bit, not really played in as many tournaments as he should do. I know a few friends of mine in Dalgefley, where Martin comes from, he was in a local competition playing at the weekend, which he came runner-up on, and he's certainly up in the practice for Lakeside, and he'd be really up for this one. But Conan Whitehead, I think he could potentially spring what you call a minor upset in this one.
Yeah, it's probably a minor upset in the sense that Martin's seeding and Conan's not, but Conan beat Cameron Menzies in the first round last year, and what was more of a shock then, I think, and Conan had a really good showing at the Finders. He was in a kind of competitive group with Tony O'Shea, William Mandigas. But he beat Mandigas and he beat O'Shea. He looked quite good and was competitive with Glenn Durrant in their quarterfinal. So I think we've got more evidence to say that Conan's going to really shine here against Martin and set up a quite an entertaining time prospect against Mark McGeaney.
The first game of the evening session on Saturday, the 5th of January, features Paul Hogan and Wes Newton. Now, this game, as the bookies suggest, is a toss of a coin, really. Paul Hogan is the slight favourite, 5-6, and Wes Newton at 21-20. Is that maybe because it's Wes Newton's first real stage game for quite a while, and Paul Hogan has had so much experience over the last few years at Lakeside, the UK Open, etc., because Wes has sort of been on a slide of form, but he's picking himself up and he's flying at the rankings once again. This really is a toss of a coin. I really, off the top of my head, can't pick a winner out of this one.
No, that's such a competitive game. I think Wes has well publicised, had quite a lot of struggles in recent years. He lost his tour card. He struggled for form and for confidence. Some suggestions he might have packed it all in altogether. So, yeah, it's going to be a real test for him, but he sneaked in the back door to this competition when it was announced there wouldn't be an Asian qualifier. He's had some good form this year. He's reached a few semi-finals. He's a great player. And I think if he shows anything like what he was capable of before, then, yeah, he deserves every shot of winning this game. But at the same time, you know what you get with Paul Hogan. He doesn't play many events. He sticks to playing for his county and playing in England-based events. But earlier in the year, and I think it was in the Isle of Man, he played Dan Day and averaged 117 or something absolutely ridiculous. Paul's a veteran of the game, but an incredibly great player. And I think that's one of those games where you just sort of sit back, put your feet up, and just let it all unfold in front of you. I don't think there's any man's a favourite in that one, and rightfully so, because I think whoever wins that will have to really earn it, because that promises to be an incredibly high-quality affair.
And the next game on Saturday afternoon really is another toss of a coin against two players who we don't really know a lot about, the two Australian friends, Mal Cumming and Justin Thompson. We've seen Justin Thompson at Lakeside on a few occasions now, and in terms of the bookies' odds, Justin Thompson's a massive favourite, but Mal Cumming has obviously qualified for this competition, so he's obviously done something right, and odds of 15-8. It could be it's quite a big price for somebody who's not really proved anything as of yet, but who knows which way this one could go.
I mean, yeah, Justin actually qualified on merit for this competition, which is incredibly hard for a regional player to do. But he did tremendously well over the course of the year. But Mal has done well. He's been competitive in events across Australia. And I think, as far as I remember, the DPA ranking system in Australia, Mal was actually number one outright ahead of Justin Thompson. They've played each other a number of times before. They'll know each other quite well. And I think that one could be really competitive, but perhaps not the highest scoring encounter. So it will be a case, as it was in Justin Thompson's game last year, of just who hits the doubles. I've not got tremendously high hopes for the quality of that one, but I'm prepared to be surprised.
Yeah, rounding things off on Saturday evening, Wesley Harms takes on Tony O'Shea. Now, Tony's been recovering from an injury for a number of years now. He went to qualifying school. It didn't quite work out for him. He's really struggled over the last couple of years with his injuries. He's a very proud man of what he's achieved in darts, and he wants to keep going. He loves the game so much. He talks about it on a daily basis, travels all over Europe trying to qualify for these tournaments. He's done very well to qualify for Lakeside, and he comes up against a strong, strong competitor in Wesley Harms, and I definitely see a Wesley Harms victory in this one. How do you think Tony will perform, Andrew?
It's hard to say. Tony's one of the nicest guys on the tour. But there's no mincing your words here. He didn't look great at the Finders. It was a 73.6 average in his first game against Conan Wyatt, which is well below Tony's best. Second game, yeah, he looked a lot better, 85.2. But he's not had a tremendous year, and he doesn't look as good as he once was. His recent record at Lakeside isn't great either. He obviously didn't qualify last year because he had so much time off for his injury. But in his last four appearances before then, he lost in the first round every single time. This could be one of the last times we see Tony on this stage. I think he's aware that his time at the top is probably coming to a close. He's had a tremendously long career. This will be his 17th Lakeside appearance. But it's hard to see him getting a win against Wesley, who I've touted him up before, but has had a tremendous few months, looked really good at the Finders and just bottled it on the doubles at the end. And if he hadn't, might well have been talking about him in the final, given the way, obviously, the draw fell for Richard. But yeah, I think Wesley's got to be the massive favourite there. But you just hope that Tony can roll back the ears a little bit and produce something close to his best, because if he does, that'll be a really cracking game.
Just moving on, just before we move on to the Sunday afternoon and evening session, Andrew, what do you make of the BDO's TV deal with Eurosport for, I think, is it 9 events they've got a deal for?
Yeah, so it's a 3-year deal for 3 events a year. So it's the World Championships, the World Trophy and the World Masters. I think it's tremendous. You had this year where the BDO really struggled for TV. You had the World Trophy was on Free Sports, which is a channel that's quite hard to obtain. I know where I live, it's actually not on the bandwidth TV signal that we get. So, like, my TV package will not pick up Free Sports. So I had to watch it through a stream online, despite the fact that I should have been able to watch it through the TV anyway, which is a problem. And if people, casual fans are what the BDO needs to draw in. And if you're having to go to that much effort to actually watch it, you're not going to attract casual fans. Casual fans will flick it on and watch it and think, oh, this is quite interesting, I'll watch this. So it's quite entertaining. But if you've got to go to the hassle to watch it, they'll just think, oh, I can't be bothered. So that was a pain. And Free Sports was still very new at the time, so I think they were still getting used to things. But John Gwynn did commentary. It was good stuff there. The World Masters this year was no TV deal at all, and they had to stream it through Wimow TV, which wasn't the end of the world. It was a good stream, but a competition with the history and the prestige of the World Masters deserves TV coverage. So the fact that's all locked in is great. It's great for attracting sponsorship and advertising for future events. And it's just good to have something concrete in place. And Eurosport are a really good provider. They do great coverage of all the stuff, and they've done BDO events before, so they know what they're doing with darts. And then the sort of station that will employ people to cover it that know what they're doing. But it's also important to recognise that for the World Championships, the BDO have signed a deal with Quest as well. So the afternoon sessions, and I believe the final, will be broadcast on Quest, which ensures that the BDO World Championship remains available on free-to-air television, as it has done for the last several years. So I think that's a massive thing. And I look forward to seeing how Quest handled the coverage as well. But yeah, I think it's great to have a good TV deal in place with reliable partners. I think Quest have actually done a really good job this season with the EFL football highlights. I know that football and darts are not necessarily equivalent, but they've done a good job with that Football League highlights program after Channel 5 dropped it. So I have every confidence that they'll do a good job, and it's nice that you're going to have two channels again.
I think for those listening to the show and those that are really big fans of the BDO week in, week out on a yearly basis, do you think like a subscription service may be a thing of the future? Maybe a small fee for a year to watch the streams such as the EDO events, the BDO events, the televised. I know was it the World Masters, I think, was on YouTube. You was able to pick it up on, and you could obviously all the smart TVs these days, all you have to do is press a button and you've got it straight onto your TV through YouTube. So maybe that's a possibility moving forward for the smaller events.
Yeah, it's definitely an option, but they need the infrastructure in place first, because at the moment getting information about draws and results and entry lists is difficult enough. And streams for events vary, and it often depends who's there, because you have to remember a lot of the players on the tour, as I was saying about Laura Turner, a lot of players on the tour are the ones responsible for doing the updates and so on. And if they're not playing at a certain event, you then often have to wait for results to come in and so on and so on. And if you're waiting for results to come in, streams might prove a lot more problematic. So I think small steps is probably the way forward. They've got a good TV deal now for the three. They've got the dates announced. They just need to start working on venues and getting sponsorship and tickets and so on. But from there, yeah, they can look at doing the events that already have streams, perhaps putting them on the BDO website, or perhaps in the future look towards a subscription model. But at the moment, I think the essence of the BDO is that this is kind of darts for everyone. You can just rock up, enter. You don't need a tour card or whatever. So I think making the most of their YouTube channel, to be honest, is the important way to go for the moment. Getting more events throughout the year live streamed and getting those live streams promoted better is the way to go at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know if you listened to it, Andrew, but I was listening to the Weekly Darts cast recently, and they had Des Jacklin on the show, and they were discussing... He was sort of discussing the BDO's plans moving forward over the next couple of years. He said there was a big announcement to come regarding some sort of deal without really disclosing what that deal was. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because I'm not sure what that deal could be. I think that's the case. We just have to wait and see. Previous chairmen and so on of the BDO have made big promises in the past and it's amounted to nothing. So I think it's very much a case of just wait and see what happens. But based on what they've done so far, I've been tremendously impressed and I look forward to seeing how the future shakes out.
Now we'll move through the last of the first round games at the 2019 BDO World Darts Championship. On Sunday the 6th of January, kicking things off in the afternoon session, Scott Wakes takes on Jeffrey Van Egdom. Now, Van Egdom wasn't too impressive in the finders, really, and I can see Scott Wakes steamrolling this one, really, if that's anything to go by.
Yeah, I don't really think there's a lot to add to that, to be honest. Jeffrey hasn't got past the last 16 of any competition this year. He's one of those players who's qualified by the fact he's consistent, but he's consistently a top 16 player, but not anything better. There's nothing to me to suggest that's going to be tremendously competitive, and that should be a fairly straightforward win for Scott.
Now the next one could be potentially a tight game, really. Brian Locken of Denmark takes on Krzysztof Czujek of Poland, and we haven't seen a lot of either play. I'd say Czujek is the player we've seen the most of, really, the Polish star, and he's 2-7 favourite with the bookies to win this one.
Yeah, I think you've got to favour the Pole, just on the fact that he's had a bit more big match experience. He's played in the PGC World Championships before. I think it's 2010. Just checking the notes there. So he's played at the PDC World Championships before. He's played at events on the BDO Tour this year. I think he got to the quarterfinals of the Czech Open, which was a good quality field. We've seen a bit more of him. Brian Locken mostly sticks to the Scandinavian events. Obviously, he's the Scandinavian regional qualifier. He qualified for the Danish Darts Open on the PDC European Tour this year and played Christo Reyes, where he looked decent. In a best of 11 game, but obviously that's not quite set play. I think he's a surprise package. I've not seen a tremendous amount of him, but given that Chuck managed to qualify for the World Championships and made a run to the last 32 of the World Masters, where he played Dave Parletti, I'd favour the Pole in that one. But yeah, could be quite close. Don't know.
And there's another really tough game without seeing much. Potentially much quality in this one is Roger Janssen versus Wouter Vaas, and Vaas hasn't really been playing consistently this year, and Roger Janssen is a quite unknown quantity, and in the bookies odds as well, there's nothing really separating the pair.
Yeah, see, that's a weird one because I've thought long and hard about this one. As you heard earlier in the show when I spoke to Dan, Wouter almost beat him in Romania at the start of the year. He was 5-1 up before Dan rallied to beat him 6-5. And then Wouter did win the Antwerp Open later in the year. So it could potentially have been two ranking events for him in 1 year, which is no mean feat. But the thing is, every time Wouter has been on the stage in a televised competition, he's looked poor. His averages have been below 80. The finders, he beat Dan in a really close game, but he didn't look tremendously impressive. And then he got beat by Scott Mitchell. He's an odd one, because I do think he is talented, but he's just quite inconsistent, and he seems to be a player who really does struggle on the TV. Whereas on the other hand, you've got Roger Janssen, who this year has been playing the best darts of his career. He's qualified for Lakeside before and was quite nervous when he qualified last time. But this year, Roger has won two events. He won in Austria and Luxembourg. It was his third ranking event total this year. He's got to three this year. And he showed at the World Masters that he's a good scorer. Got over, I think it's over 90 in the end, his average finished at. So I think Roger is a good player. And I think on what I've seen of him, what he's done this year, I think he's more impressive than Wouter, and I'd favour Roger for the win. but that one could be quite poor. If Wouter plays at the same state level he's played it on TV before, and kind of that drags Rodgers' game down as well, that could be quite a low-scoring sort of game that gets criticism on Twitter, that kind of game. So, yeah. I'd favour Roger, but don't hold me to it.
The penultimate match on Sunday evening features Mark McGrath of New Zealand and potentially Adam Smith-Neill, as we spoke about, whether or not he'll... It's not whether or not he'll play in the tournament, but whether... what the state of his injury will be, whether he will really, really struggle. And if he does struggle, the odds of 31 to 21 for Mark McGrath to win might be better odds nearer to the competition starting.
I really don't... I wouldn't be shocked at all to see McGrath win that, actually, to be honest. I would have favoured Smith-Neill before, but the injury and the fact he was saying that, oh, I won't be... I'm only just getting on my feet now. I'm starting physio next week with less than a week to go to the tournament. You can't back him with any level of confidence until you see him. So for me, yeah, the safe bet would be on McGrath. He's won a game in the World Series of Darts before. He's a really good thrower. He's been to Lakeside before. Yeah, I would favour McGrath. I don't even think that's a question at this point. But the issue is going to be if Smith-Neill makes it. Because if he doesn't make it, you would hope that it's not just a buy for Mark McGrath and they manage to get a replacement in. And the protocol last year when James Harrell pulled out, it was the highest ranked player at the cutoff in September, which, as far as my memory works, would possibly mean Richie Edwards squeaks in at the back door again, or it would perhaps be Andy Bartons, who reached the quarterfinals last year, or maybe Jeffrey Sparadons. But, yeah. I think you've got to back Mark McGrath. And to be honest, I think if you can back him, I'd take the odds you can get now before perhaps the bookies wise up that Adam's going to be nowhere near 100% by the time Lakeside comes around.
And rounding things off on Sunday evening, Wayne Warren of Wales takes on Mark Layton. Now, Wayne Warren is the far more consistent player. His scoring is excellent. He's produced some great stuff over the last year or two. Been fantastic on tour since he's gone full-time on the tour over the last 12 months. And he is the bookies' favourite against Mark Layton, but Layton has played some good stuff himself.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't look past Warren. He was great last year at Lakeside. He's been great all year. Looked really good at the Finders. Averaged almost 96 against Chris Landman. Lost a really tight quarterfinal against Jim Williams as well. Yeah, Wayne's the favourite for me there.
And moving into the final 2 days of the first round, Monday the 7th of January, David Cameron, the Canadian qualifier, takes on Andy Hamilton. Andy Hamilton, obviously, an overwhelming favourite. But David Cameron, Andrew, he has played in a lot of stage matches over the last couple of years, both PDC and BDO. And... with the odds that are stacked on David Cameron to potentially lose this match, it's going to be an interesting game, this one.
Yeah, I don't understand why Cameron's not being given a look in. This will be the sixth time the Canadian has been Lakeside. Last year, he lost his darts on the flight because he never got his luggage when he got off the plane. So he had to get darts from someone else. And then he only just lost to Michael and to Buchner in the preliminary round. And in previous years to that, he's played Danny Noppert, obviously now starring on the PDC and a former Lakeside finalist. He's played Ted Hankey and he's played Martin Adams. He's played top-level players before, and he's played on the World Series of Darts. David's a good player, but obviously Andy Hamilton's got a name, and people will always back a name in the instance of Lakeside where a lot of people won't have seen a lot of these players before. Andy's rightfully the favourite, I would have thought, because he's played a lot more higher level darts this year. Reached two finals at the Welsh Open and the Malta Open. But yeah, Dave Cameron's got a chance. And he's played on that Lakeside stage before, so I would not write him off at all.
And on Monday afternoon, Oliver Ferenc takes on Ryan Hogarth. Now that one really is a toss of a coin, but the odds are pointing towards Ryan Hogarth, who is the favourite, and rightfully so. You know quite a bit about Ryan yourself, don't you, Andrew?
Yeah, he's really shone this year, Ryan. He qualified for the World Trophy in June, and that kick-started his year. He got a good win there against Gary Robson, and he's just really boosted himself on from there. He's played at a lot of UK-based events, reached a couple of quarterfinals, and most recently played at the Czech Open, where he also got to the quarterfinal. Ryan's got himself into the top 50 of the world, and yeah, he's really seemed to, that World Trophy gave him some confidence, and I think he's a top player, and I really look forward to seeing what he can do against Oliver Ferencz, who's an unknown quantity in many respects. He qualified for this tournament on the grounds of two tournaments at the back end of 2017, and he's played very little since then. So yeah, I you can't get much of a read on the Serb. But Ryan Hogarth, from what we've seen, is a top, top player, and I look forward to seeing him in action.
Now, a guest on the show in this episode, Daniel Day, he takes on Dean Reynolds in what should be a fantastic first-round match, Andrew. 10 o'clock on Monday evening, it is definitely a must-watch game, this one.
I would have thought so, but Dean has not had the strongest of years, so... And he didn't look tremendously great at the finder, so I don't think you can put any confidence by him. But I think the real one to watch for me here is Dan. He's had a great year, lovely bloke. And we know he's going to Q School, as he told us earlier on the show. So you know he's ready for this. Lakeside meant a lot to him last year. It's going to be totally different this year. He's been there, he's done it. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him in action and seeing what he can do this year, because he's one to watch for the future.
And on Tuesday, the 8th of January, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, on Quest, Ross Montgomery against Scott Baker. Now, the odds are exactly the same for either player, so it is a toss of a coin by the bookies. But I do fancy Baker for this one. He's certainly been the better player this year.
Yeah, I don't really see how you can pick Ross with any confidence for a couple of reasons. One, he has a very poor record at Lakeside. He's played the tournament a number of times before, but he's lost in the first round on 7 occasions, only getting out of the first round 4 times. But he's also had a very poor year. Considering this time last year he was the number 5 seed, this year he's the number 15 seed, and since then he's dropped out of the world's top 16. It's hard to back Ross, whereas Scott Baker doesn't play a tremendous amount of events, so it's hard for him to really push on and make a real name for himself. But he played some good darts at the World Trophy this year, Scott Baker. Got to the quarterfinals, having beaten Scott Waites and Andy Bartons before losing a really high-quality game against Jim Williams. And he's won 2 events as well. He won in Wolverhampton, he won in Germany. So, yeah, I think this is a real chance for Scott Baker, someone who Chris Mason knows very well. I think this is a real chance for Scott to shine against someone who's not had a good year, and if we're using the Fenders as a form guide, didn't look very good there either.
And rounding off the first round on Tuesday, 8th of January, at 9:15, over on Eurosport, Chris Landman takes on the Northern Irishman, Kyle McKinstry. Now, Kyle McKinstry, for me, Andrew, if I was going to pick an outside player to win the event, now Kyle would be my pick. He's scoring power is absolutely phenomenal. We actually discussed a game, I think it was at Bridlington, between himself and Dave Parletti, where the average more than 105 between the pair, and it just shows that Kyle McKinstry's scoring power is up there with some of the best, even PDC level too. And he belongs to a management stable who look after the likes of Darryl Gurney, James Wilson, so Q score I think will be definitely on the cards for Kyle. But first things first, Lakeside is the massive favourite for this one, and rightfully so.
Yeah, no, I think Kyle's got a massive chance. I know he's going to Q School at the next year. He said that, and he's got tremendous quality. He's a top, top player. He's a great scorer, and he just needs a bit of consistency, to be honest. The World Trophy, he started off, averaged over 99. After that, He hit 92, and then the average kind of tailed off a little bit. So for Kyle, he just needs to get a good average, but hit the doubles. But yeah, he's a great chance. If he can beat Chris Landman, which I think he should. Chris, Isle of Man Open finalist this year, but he's not a big scorer. He's quite hit or miss. Kyle can win that. Potentially plays Andy Hamilton, Gary Robson. Very winnable game for someone of Kyle's quality, especially if it comes down to scoring, because he is the power scorer. And a potential quarterfinal against Glenn Durrant. So for me, I think that's a big thing. I think if Kyle can play Glenn, that'll be a tremendous game. And if anyone's going to knock Glenn out, Kyle's got as good a chance as anyone.
Yeah, and that rounds up the first round matches of the BDO World Darts Championship. And of course, we've got the a few preliminary round matches in there as well. Dave Parletti, Scott Mitchell, a potential player who can sort of maybe cause a few upsets. I know he could. Yeah, and it's going to be certainly an interesting to see how Dave gets on, because over the last 18 months, we've been exciting to see how Dave could get on.
Yeah, no, I think Dave's a great player. He's had a good year. He's got great quality. He's a lovely bloke as well. I mean, that shouldn't matter, like what sort of person they are, their ability. But he's a lovely bloke. He's generally a really likable guy. He's been on this show before. He's a fan of the show. But I think Dave's a great player. I think he should have a great chance. I think Brian or Christoph's not the hardest first round game he could have got by any stretch of the imagination. And if he can win that, potentially play Scott Mitchell, all those kind of players. Dave's got the talent and the quality to mix it with anyone in this competition. And I think he's going to open a lot of eyes.
So, Andrew, sort of looking at the draw for the 2019 BDO World Darts Championship, how do you see the men's side of things shaping up?
I'll stick with the bold prediction I made last time. Wesley Harms is the player to watch in that top half of the draw. He's got some other great players on his side of the competition. You've got the likes of Paul Hogan, Wes Newton, Willem Mandigers, who spoke to the show and said that he won't be going to Q School. You've got Wayne Warren, Michael Lunter-Buchner. He's in a very tough side of the draw, but Wes has had a great year. He's someone I have a lot of respect for. He seems to have a newfound focus, a newfound confidence. He's showed he can mix it at the Grand Slam. And I have no reason to suspect that he'll be stopped this year. And I think he could get back to at least the semi-finals or perhaps the final. But if we're picking a winner, it's very hard to look past Glenn Durrant. I mean, the man's been there. He's done it. He's won it twice. He showed at the Finders that he's still every bit as good as ever. We know he's heading off to Q School, but I mean, yeah, Glenn's the favourite for me. But if you want somebody else to watch, it's got to be Wesley Harms.
Yeah, and there's going to be no better way for Glenn Durrant to exit the BDO than becoming a three-time winner of the BDO World Championship. And not just a three-time winner, but three times in a row. That would really be something special for Glenn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, very few players in history have ever done that. If any, if I remember correctly. I mean, Bristow did it, but I think Bristow's the only one who's won it three times in a row, back in the 80s. So, yeah, Glenn's just a phenomenal player. He's been a great servant of the BDO, and he deserves every success. And going out with a bang would be no more than he deserves.
Yeah, I think high averages we can expect in this tournament. There's going to be a lot of drama, as we see every year at the Lakeside. Could you see any of the big seeds crashing out early?
Obviously, we spoke. I could see Martin Phillips dropping early. We said about Montgomery. Gary Robson, who's had a career best year, would probably be the slight underdog against Andy Hamilton. That could be. You could see Gary go out early. You never know. You could see Scott Mitchell go out early. He's a former winner of the competition, but I think quite highly of Ryan Hogarth, and we saw Scott exit relatively early last year. He could fall again. But I think most of the top seeds will fare safely through to the second round, but that's when I think we might see some of the bigger names start to fall. All aboard the Wesley Harms bus. He's going to win.
So, yeah. Thank you very much to my co-host Andrew for another enjoyable episode of Inside the BDO, the podcast. Don't forget to get involved on Twitter, give us a follow at Inside the BDO, and enjoy the 2019 BDO World Darts Championship. And thank you once again to my co-host Andrew.
No problem at all, Tom. It's been a great tournament to preview. Can't wait for the action, and I can't wait to record another episode where we review everything that's gone down.